owe them, but very few of us know them. They took an oath to protect us at home and abroad, so the rest of us can live safe and free. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities, and these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Bueller Garcia. Welcome to American Warrior Radio. Before we begin today's show, I want to send my personal condolences out to our listeners in Sacramento on the tragic loss of Deputy Adam Gibson and K-9 Officer Riley of the Sacramento County Sheriff's Office. Both were killed in the line of duty while attempting to apprehend a barricaded suspect. 31-year-old Gibson was a Marine who served two tours of duty in Afghanistan and was a 6-year veteran of the Sheriff's Department. He leaves behind a wife and a 9-month-old child. K-9 Riley was 5 years old and had been in service with the Sheriff's Department for 3 years. We also send out our prayers for quick healing to the second deputy wounded in the incident. Rest easy, officers. We've got the watch. Over the last 8 years of doing American Warrior Radio, it's truly been a privilege to share stories of heroes who protect us at home and abroad, and it's been fun. I jumped into this project rather naively with absolutely no radio experience, and it's been an on-the-job learning experience for me. It's not difficult, although doing live radio does have its bumps in the road, like the fighter pilot who insisted on doing her interview while undergoing a bout of laryngitis because she so desperately wanted for her story to be heard. Or interviewing Matthew Marsden from the parking lot of a Texas Cracker Barrel on a very windy day. Or perhaps my favorite, the World War II veteran, slightly hard of hearing, who missed the cue and continued to tell his story through the entire commercial break. Bless his heart. I try to make guests feel comfortable. It's just a friendly fireside chat between two people with thousands of others eavesdropping. But you should know that your host is not always calm, sometimes not without jitters. And today is going to be one of those days. Like any industry, there are certain individuals who have risen to the peak, broadcast ninja, if you will. So for a self-taught schlub like me to have one of them on my little show, well, let's just see how this plays out. Our guest today is a veteran broadcaster applying her art as both a radio and television host. She is a best-selling author and 3 times has been recognized with the Emmy Award, the highest recognition for excellence in our industry. She has interviewed no fewer than 20 world leaders and the Pope. She even interviewed a serial killer. If I'm lucky, maybe she'll teach me a thing or two today. Welcome to American Warrior Radio, one of the most respected broadcasters in America, Rita Cosby.
Ben, it's great to be with you. And by the way, bravo to what you are doing here on American Warrior Radio and highlighting these incredible heroes. And I loved how you opened the show and how important that you remembered the loss of the sheriff's deputy and his canine. It's so important to teach these values, and I'm thrilled to be with you.
Well, it's the highlight of my career. I'll leave it at that, Rita. Let's a little into the Wayback Machine, though. What inspired a girl from Greenwich, Connecticut to go into the journalism business?
You know, I always believed in wanting to make a difference in some different way. And I grew up in an interesting household. My father is Polish, literally from Warsaw, Poland, and was a freedom fighter in Warsaw, Poland. My mother was Danish. And the two of them, sitting around the dinner table, would talk about all these, you know, amazing places in the world and talked about very substantive things because they both grew up during World War II. So I would hear these stories of people fighting for freedom and the importance of standing on principle and standing on value and the heroism and different periods of their time, of what they grew up through. And I remember sitting at the table and thinking, you know, first of all, very proud of both of my parents and to learn what they had both overcome in their childhood and very young age when they were both thrust into war. And I also remember thinking, gosh, I want to go to these incredible places that they are talking about that have such deep, important meaning in history and have been the forefront of pivotal moments. And it made me think, gosh, you know, if I could go there, you know, when I grow up and to be able to see these places and meet some of these incredible people that my parents have talked about that have shaped the world, boy, would I be lucky, and to get paid for it would be a great thing, too.
Wait, you get paid?
Once in a while. I don't want to tell them, by the way. I would pay them because I love being able to give back and to do things. But don't let them in on that secret, okay?
Now your bio lists an internship, Rita, with some guy at CBS I never heard of, Dan Rather. But what was your first broadcast gig, your first on-the-air gig?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, it's funny. Early on, I actually wanted to be a writer, and I sent a book in, a sample, to a big publishing house. And I think I was like 7 or 8 years old or something that I have to check. But I remember when I sent it, and I got a letter back saying, "This is an amazing story. You show tremendous promise. Get back to us in a few decades because you're going to be a really good journalist." But that was sort of the beginning of my sort of writing career. And then in terms of broadcasting, I actually did an exchange program when I was in Spain, and I did a bit of broadcasting work there, which helped me to learn Spanish and to be bilingual. I did a college exchange program over there. And then I went to school at University of South Carolina, and I did a couple different work there. I did a couple different internships and part-time things there. And then I got this coveted internship, as you talked about, to be, at the time, Dan Rather, who is still obviously certainly a legend in our business and still very busy in the broadcast world. But at that time, he was head of CBS Evening News. He was the face, really, of news almost in the country. I mean, he was really, it was so predominant, as we know, you know, there was Walter Cronkite, and then, mm-hmm. you know, Dan Rather was there. And it was an incredible internship. And for me to be there at that time where so much was happening, and it was right after everything was happening with Tiananmen Square, and we were talking about Noriega. I remember talking about the space program with him, and he was always extremely, extremely kind to me. And what I learned also early on just in that internship, Ben, was just the hard work and the teamwork and how many people really go into making a great broadcast. And to appreciate everybody's role, you know, from the intern, because they treated me almost like a staffer. I got there. I was a hard worker. I've always been a hard worker. And I got there, I think, earlier than everybody and stayed later than everybody. But they recognized that and they appreciated that. And they were very helpful with me also in giving me guidance as to where I should get my first full-time job. And I remember one of my greatest moments was walking into Dan Rather and also talking to Bob Schieffer, who was also there at the time, and, you know, and he was in Washington, but he was also frequently up there in the New York office. And I remember saying, I have 12 job offers, which I did. I had 12 job offers out of, and I said, which one should I take? And literally sitting there with Dan Rather and Bob Schieffer and others at different points and them giving me guidance as to why to take this particular one over this particular one and giving me the just really good leading advice and also taking the time. And that said a lot to me. And that's something that I did take my first job. I worked in a full-time job in TV, was in Bakersfield. And it was at KERO. It was a CBS station at the time in Bakersfield. And it was a terrific experience. And I got to cover everything from huge names in the political world that came through there because it was right outside of Los Angeles and it was an important area, all the way to interviewing farm workers, to doing stories on the local festivals and fairs. But I got to do a lot of very, very substantive stories because they would do this big Bakersfield Business and Finance Conference, and every year they would have these who's who that would come through there, and they picked me as being the person to be able to interview a lot of those who's who. So I got to spend a lot of time with some really big names very, very early on. And in fact, one of the people I interviewed, actually, I'm thinking back at the time, was Larry King. And as you know, he had passed away, we just learned recently. And I was so, so sad to hear that because I got to know Larry quite well through the years. But that was, I think, the first time that I met him, actually, when I was there in Bakersfield. There I was a Cub reporter and got to have a chance to spend about 15, 20 minutes, sometimes half an hour, with some of these major, major figures in the world, from entertainment to politics to everything else. And I did get to spend some time, I remember, with Larry. That was my very first time interviewing him, and he was very kind to me. And I felt that I got just great training early on, great experience early on. And from there, I moved to Charlotte, North Carolina, which was a big jump in the broadcasting world because Bakersfield was a much smaller market, even though it was near L.A. but had great mentors and great colleagues. And then I went to Charlotte. And then from there, I got a call saying, hey, how would you like to be one of the first faces, basically, of Fox News? We're starting this brand new network, and we're going to put you at White House, and we're going to put you all over Washington. So sort of the sky's the limit from there on out, but got to meet so many interesting people through the years. And I think now, you know, it's funny, I think back of some of the faces and some of the most incredible people I got to interview while I was there in Bakersfield, but also while I was in Charlotte, but also real-life heroes, too, and got to know some of the sheriff's deputies and veterans and things and first responders, so many of the people that you so beautifully highlight on your show.
Well, Rita, I think of all the guests that we have had on the show, you'll understand my next comment. We do have to take a break to pay for the show. So I hope you'll be patient with us.
I do understand that.
And I want to talk about your dad's story. I want to talk about all the things that you have done and continue to do to support our brave men and women of the military. But just let me leave you with sort of a teaser here, because I can't help but want to get your feedback, being literally the pinnacle of the broadcast industry. I believe that a talk show host's most important quality is not the ability to talk, but rather the ability to listen. So when we come back, I'd like you to help me address that, and then we'll get into some of the other things. Ladies and gentlemen, there's your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, speaking with one of the most respected broadcasters in America, Rita Cosby. Stick around. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're just having a doozy of a time so far talking with someone I truly admire. And frankly, I'm guessing Rita, most of America admires. Rita Cosby, 3-time Emmy Award-winning journalist, radio host, TV host, best-selling author. Rita, I sort of left a tease before the show. I'm, as you saw, I've got two last names to honor both sides of my heritage. The Bueller side, the German side. I mean, I've got 6 pages of show notes. I want to be prepared. Everything's got to be on track. Let's follow the script. The Garcia side is more kind of like, you know, whatever. Que pasa, you know, lo que pasa. So I find it interesting when I said before the break that people don't tune into the show to hear me. They tune into the show to hear you, and the importance of listening, and how sometimes an interview, you know, you have to be available to those doors that might crack open a little bit that take the interview in a completely different direction, but a better direction. Has that been your experience, or should I just stick to broadcasting on my garage?
No, definitely do not stick to your garage. Continue it in a big, big way, because your voice is so important, and honoring these heroes that you're doing so beautifully, Ben, you absolutely have to continue. Don't you dare stay in the garage, all right? but listening is the key, and I think you hit on a great point, because so many times I've gone into an interview, and I'll have my notes. I think I'm probably the Bueller side of your family times 10. I'm very, very precise. I always like to be super prepared. I'm always over prepared, so often staying up through the night, you know, trying to get interesting details about people and different, and ask a question, especially when it's somebody who is, you know, a world leader or somebody like that who's been asked 1,000 questions. So how can you ask that question in a different way to get a different answer? But I think it's also listening, exactly as you said, because often people kind of go in with their preconceived notion of, okay, here are the 10 questions I'm going to ask, and somebody says something so amazing on the first answer or the second answer, but you're so caught up in, okay, asking my next question, you didn't think about. And I think that's where a seasoned interviewer, and obviously you have this beautiful ability too, Ben, I can hear it, is that it's important to be able to say, oh gosh, wait a minute, just the way that person said that word or said that name, that means something special to them, or they're not telling the full story. Sometimes, you know, when I'm interviewing politicians, oh, wait a minute, they dodged that answer. Don't let them dodge. You know, go back to that. Listen to what they said. They kind of glossed over that answer. Let's go back here. Or if somebody has a particular, there's a sentimentality to that answer. Wait, the way they said that answer, the way they spoke about that person, there's obviously some personal connection here. Let me go back to that. And then you often get the most amazing answer, or the most insightful, or the most news-making. Some of the things that I think about that I have done through the years or where I've interviewed people and I've gotten, you know, headlines that have made, you know, been around the world have been because I listened and let that person talk. And then they said something and I said, well, what did you mean by that? Wait a minute. I heard how you kind of got choked up when you said that. Was there something that happened or did something happen with that behind the scenes with that world leader that, you know, you kind of didn't answer it fully. What really happened there?
Rita,
and you get this wow moment, you know?
I've got to ask, though, it's amazing what I've learned on the job over 8 years, you know, in a studio with professional-grade headphones. It's amazing what you can discern, and you touched on what you can hear coming over the wire. But in looking at your just pantheon of people that you've interviewed over the years, you've talked to two men that I consider just the absolute epitome of evil, Slobodan Milosevic and David Berkowitz, the son of Sam. Could you, just out of curiosity, could you feel that vibe coming over the air?
Oh, absolutely. And in the case of, like, Milosevic, I asked him, and I'll never forget this moment. There's, you know, this was years ago, and he called in to me. I had been waiting to do the interview for a long time, and then finally he called in. He was actually in The Hague. Imagine this. In his prison cell, he left his prison cell to call me from a phone, I think, down the hall. And he actually got his phone privileges revoked afterwards because he wasn't supposed to be able to sneak down the hall and make a phone call. But I'm glad he did make the call to me, at least. And I asked him, why did you authorize these atrocities, these horrible atrocities, the ethnic cleansing and all those horrible things that were going on, as we know, that were taking place in that part of the world at the time? And his answer was a very cold answer. He said, you know, I'm sorry basically for the civilians, but, you know, I make no excuse for the military ones, that I was defending my country and that it was a very sort of calculated, and you could just hear, you could see him saying, oh, well, those are collateral damage and this is basically, you know, doing it in the name of, for my country, and that's what happens in war. It was a very sort of like methodical, almost as if people had, there was no heart whatsoever. It was a very, very cold and calculated. You could see him making those decisions and you could hear it in his voice. And then Son of Sam, when I had interviewed David Berkowitz, I actually was face-to-face with David Berkowitz when I did that interview. And I could see when I started asking him, you know, he was acting like almost like, let's not talk about what happened, you know, in that period. You know, that was just a bad period. Let's talk about what I'm doing now. And I'm like, wait. The whole reason I'm here is because of, you know, you terrorized New York City. You terrorized the country, you know, with what was going on at that moment. And I said to him, you know, do you regret, you know, what happened? And I could see him literally melting down before my eyes. I could see it as if it was yesterday. I don't want to talk about that, Rita. I don't want to talk about that. You know, like as if that was supposed to be this little period that the world was supposed to gloss over. And at the time, he was actually seeking parole and trying to get parole. And I remember watching and saying that this man is certainly not ready for parole at that moment, that he had still not come to terms with what he had done. And he wanted to really compartmentalize that terrible period, that brief period that he just wanted to kind of gloss over in his mind, you know, and compartmentalize it and move on with everything else and not fully acknowledge what he had done and the horror that he had brought on so many people. And he was denied, needless to say, for parole soon after that.
Did you? I've got to imagine that. I mean, did you want to jump in a decontamination chamber after being so close to somebody like that? I mean, holy smokes.
Oh, it was really, actually, it was an interesting thing to see literally before my eyes. He was literally melting down. And the guards, in fact, had said to me, it was interesting before that, they said, oh, this guy is cool as a cucumber. He's this, he's that. And I think because I was listening and asking the right questions, getting back to your point, and I could see that he was just trying to sort of discard that period and talk about other things that he wanted to talk about. And, of course, I was willing to talk about other things that he wanted to talk about, but I, of course, was going to talk about what he had done and see if he really had atoned and really understood the depth of his depravity and what he had done. And clearly at that moment, he did not want to go there, and he just physically started melting. And the guards were saying to me, "We got to take him away. We got to take him away." And he literally was taken away, and I think put into a private room for I think a few days or a few weeks, possibly even after that, because he just literally almost had a meltdown in front of me, and the guards had to grab him because you could just see he was falling apart right in front of me, and it was this the shades of the person, the different layers, literally being exposed, and that was a moment I will never forget.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Rita Cosby. She's interviewed over 20 world leaders. You heard of a serial killer, entertainment icons, but the most important and greatest interview may have been her own father. Stick around. You're going to want to hear this. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, there's your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Very pleased and honored to be speaking with Rita Cosby, it's my show, the most respected broadcaster in America. How's that, Rita?
Boy, my head is getting inflated. if I could be one millionth of that, I'll take it.
Now, Rita, being a broadcast ninja is not enough to get you on American Warrior Radio, so let's get into the heart of really why you're here. Your commitment to supporting our veterans and members of the military is gone on through your entire career, and it's been very strong, and thank you for that. But you also have a personal connection. And I tell you that when you talked about that publisher early on, it made me think they should have accepted your transcript, because now you've got two New York Times bestsellers. And sometimes the thing I like about your words, I don't know how to really describe this. Sometimes words are so well written, you can almost taste them. They have a flavor. And you describe being a young child and seeing scars on your father that were, quote, etched like cracks in dried mud. But when you asked your mother about it, she said, we don't talk about it. Your curiosity eventually was satisfied many years later. Tell us about the contents of that old battered tan suitcase.
Oh, yeah. And I remember it so clearly. And I remember, you know, first, as you were talking about, Ben, that when my dad came back from a run, he took his shirt off, and I saw those scars on his body. And again, my mother's response was, you know, your father went through tough times. We don't talk about it. The door was closed until suddenly that suitcase. I remember going, my mother had passed away, and I remember going through her belongings, and I found this old tan battered suitcase in the corner, and I opened it up, and it basically was my father's life. And my parents got divorced when I was a teenager. It was a very sort of abrupt divorce. And my father, I always knew, was a very determined man. And I mentioned he was a marathon runner, someone who was very disciplined and very focused, and yet emotionally very disconnected. And, you know, it was not very good in terms of, you know, sharing stories. And I knew he went through a painful period when he was growing up, but I didn't know very much about it. And like so many people who go through battle and go through wars, and so many of the people that you so beautifully profile on your show, Ben, you know, I think when they've been through difficult times, experiences, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, or whether it's a law enforcement, you compartmentalize it and you just sort of put it in the back, and that's the way you sort of survive, and that's certainly the way my father did. And others talk about it, and I'm so glad I had the opportunity to share it, because when I found that suitcase, I opened it up, and inside was a bloody red and white Polish armband, and I came to find out it was my father's blood and the blood of some of his comrades on it. And I looked at it and I said, oh my gosh, what is this? And then I found a card of an ex-POW saying Richard Kozabutsky. And you can imagine, here I am, Rita Cosby. And I thought, oh my gosh, I knew my father was Polish. I see the name. I'm like, you know, and my father, as I mentioned, my parents had a very disconnected and a very abrupt divorce. And I had to literally track down my father. And I had to find out if he was alive or dead and where he was. And I located my father. And I tell everybody it started the greatest story of my life. And I said, Dad, I want to know who you are. I want to know who I am. I want to know our history. And I think because at that point my father was older, and my father, you know, I was coming to him with a very kind of humble heart. And I think my father felt, if I don't tell this story now, it will never be told. And what my father went through was extraordinary. My father, as a teenager, was a citizen soldier, literally part of the Warsaw Uprising, the Home Army in Poland, and grew up in Poland. As I mentioned, he's Polish, and was there literally when World War II began, and decided to stay and fight as part of the Home Army, and was one of these incredibly heroic, and there were so many men and women who fought in the Home Army there in World War II. It was the biggest citizen resistance of World War II. And what people don't realize is these were young boys and girls who said, I am going to fight for my country, knowing that the odds were so deeply against them. I mean, the Germans had invaded. They were cutting off water. They were cutting off religion. They were cutting off school. They were cutting off everything. And the ghetto uprising had happened. My father was seeing what was happening in the ghetto, was trying to help those inside the ghetto, because my father wanted to help everybody. And my father would have young Jewish people coming to his door. He was feeding them. He was trying to get them things in the ghetto at great risk, because you would have been killed had you even fed a Jewish citizen. My father was Polish Catholic. And then my father and his men and women decided to rise up and were part of the Warsaw Uprising, which was on August 1st, 1944. And what people don't realize, you think about how many people we lost on 9/11. You know, they lost that amount of people every day in the Warsaw Uprising, because at that point they knew their country was being obliterated by the Nazis, and it was all hands on deck. And they thought the odds were very much against them. My father lost about 90% of his unit. You know, you think about the odds of people fighting frontline. My father literally fought frontline fighting and was fighting about a block from his house, and was fighting for everything he had. And they call him the underground, the Polish underground, because they were fighting underground. They were hiding through sewers. They were escaping in sewers, as my father did. And literally, he was one of the last men out of his unit in Old Town Warsaw, which was obliterated by the Nazis. And if you look at the pictures of World War II, literally right by the ghetto, and that area is where my father was fighting and for everything he had. And then my father was ultimately taken into captivity. He was taken to Stalag 4B in Molberg, Germany. And at 90 pounds and 6 feet tall, my father escaped. And then he was one of the more healthy guys. Imagine that. So you can imagine what the other guys look like. 60, you know, here he is 6 feet tall, 90 pounds about, a walking skeleton. And he and about 60 Polish guys ultimately were in the woods. They were in the woods for about 2.5 days. They're in Germany. Can you imagine how scary that is? You're in Germany. You're escaped POWs from a Nazi camp. You know what's going to happen to you the minute you get caught. And many of them who did capture were recaptured and killed and executed on site. And so my father's there. A plane comes by, throws out something, and they dive for the ditch, thinking, okay, this is the end of the line. And they think it's a grenade, and that's it. It's a German plane. We're done. The plane comes by again, and they realize, they look up and they see a star on the plane, and they realize it's the most beautiful sight in the world. It's an American plane. And they realize what was thrown out was not a grenade, but it was a chocolate bar with a note wrapped around it, tied with a red ribbon. And the note, which, by the way, only one of them could barely read, because my father was Polish. He couldn't even read English, you know, so you can imagine it's a note from an American pilot. And it basically said, welcome, you're safe to walk now during daytime. You have 15 miles to walk, and you are free. Go west. And they ran 15 miles after they were able to translate it. They shared the chocolate bar because they were starving POWs, and ran 15 miles and came to a riverbed and were literally saved by American troops that were on the other side of the line. And they said, you're free, you're free. And here's my dad. You know, I get emotional, even thinking about it now, Ben, because here he is on the other side of the riverbed, and all he could see, he thought it was a mirage when he saw American troops, and all he could say was, thank you. That was the only word he knew in English at that time, and they kept saying, you're free, you're free. And my father at that moment said, gosh, I want to come to this incredible country called America, because for them to send their young men, you know, thousands of miles away to free this country, you know, to free Poland and so many people and free the world at that moment, I want to come to this incredible country. And that's why my father literally kissed the ground when he came to America years later.
You know, Rita, you make me think of, I had the actor Matthew Marsden on, and this was one of the moments from my radio career that I remember distinctly, because I don't know if you know Matthew, but he, you know, very distinctive British. In fact, he just achieved his U.S. citizenship. And I'm talking to him, and with the British accent, he's saying, Ben, America, this is it. This is the last greatest bastion of freedom on the planet. And he talked about how our military goes around the world, not just to defend Americans, but to save other people and preserve freedom for them. And it just, I melted. It was just so powerful. And really, I believe in the power of storytelling and your story. And the book we're talking about, I apologize, is called Quiet Hero. And just a great read. And in an interview you did for that book, Rita, you said, I think this book will make people realize how important it is to fight for freedom, how great the values are that we're founded on, and what it means to be free. Just talk about the importance, because I hear you talking about your dad, and he was 13, 15 years old. And to be honest with you, I look at our country right now, and, how many 15-year-olds would do that? I don't know. It kind of breaks my heart a little bit.
Well, that's why one of the things that I'm so proud of, and an extension of my life and my family's history, is what I'm doing now also as the chairman of the Global Service Institute, and leading this to bring in those values to young people, to instill those values to the next generation and beyond, because we cannot lose that, because this is the greatest country in the world, and it represents freedom not just to America, but as you just talked about, what we represent to think about, not just my father, but millions of people around the globe who every day are praying that they come to a riverbed with American GIs on the other side. This beacon on the hill, this incredible thing that is America. And it's something that we can all be so proud of. And to be able to pass those values on of giving back and of service and what it means to be an American and of appreciating those of service, I think that that is so critical right now and needed now more than ever. And the one thing I will say, you know, on a positive note, not just the creation of this incredible institute, which I'm so proud, and it's the Global Service Institute at Long Island University, which is a storied university. It's an incredible university, you know, founded back in the 1920s, built on service, and they've already had a base of great service through the incredible leadership of President Kim Kline, who leads it there, who's just an amazing visionary. But they want to instill these values of service and integrate it into education and take it to the next level so people understand and ways, tangible ways they can give. And what a timely thing right now, particularly, Ben, as you think about in the world, as we're going through the pandemic, because we can look at real-life heroes. They're in the military, they're in law enforcement, they're public servants, they're also doctors and nurses. And what a great way to be able to showcase them right now.
And Rita, you are truly a pro, because that's a perfect transition. I do want to talk more about the Institute now when we come back. And don't let me forget, let's talk about your the Merchant Marines Gold Medal as well. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Ben Bueller Garcia with Rita Cosby. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, a personal thrill for me to be talking with Rita Cosby, one of the more preeminent broadcasters in our nation. And Rita, we've got just about 10 minutes left and a lot to cover, but I want to talk about this. Well, back up a little bit. So in my day job, Rita, when I'm not broadcasting out of my garage, I work with a lot of nonprofits. And volunteers are the high-octane jet fuel of the nonprofit world. And so that's why I was so thrilled to see this, the Global Service Institute, come about, and really your role or the initiative to create generations of greater good. I think those are your words, definitely not mine. I've always been a believer in servant leadership, and I see that a lot amongst the members of the military and the veterans out there in our community. Do you... Well, give us kind of the Reader's Digest version. I'm old, so I don't get the whole app thing. But in essence, the Reader's Digest version here is this provides an opportunity for people, no matter where they are, to find opportunities to volunteer and engage in making their own communities better. Bang, bang, end of story.
Yeah, and you know what? I think you hit it on the head in a number of levels there, because you're right. A lot of people in the military have that intuitive. I mean, it's amazing the dedication they have to serve. And we wanted to sort of instill those values in people of all ages, because I think the thing that has happened through the pandemic is, and I think the heart of the American spirit has always been there to give and to find ways to give back and do things. But sometimes you just have to find a way to galvanize everybody. And that's what really the Global Service Institute at Long Island University is doing. And we've done a number of ways to get that, because I think with what we have seen with the pandemic in particular, people have really grown to appreciate the value of those of service. And you think about the important role that the military has played, the officers have played, police officers, first responders, as you've talked about, on so many different levels, you know, nurses. You know, now think about, you know, even in New York where I am based, you know, they have the call where at X o'clock suddenly, especially at the height of the pandemic, where people would get outside of their windows and cheers for the doctors and nurses and that great spirit that is the best of America, to appreciate those who have been giving back and putting their lives on the line, literally, as they have been fighting this battle. And what we're doing at the Global Service Institute, you know, we're going to be having a number of courses. We have a number of different programs to get young people and old inspired to give back. We also created a Global Service app, and everybody can download it. It is a free app, and you can get it on the App Store or Google Play, and basically it will connect you right away with whatever area of service you want to give, because that's the important thing. There's some people who say, gosh, I'd love to be out there in the military, but maybe that's not my strong point, is going out there and being on the front line of battle. How can I give? What works with me, with my timetable, with my age, with maybe my skills, my different levels? We are going to show you how and make it super easy for you. So we created, and this has been created and managed by Long Island University. It's one of the first of its kind, by an educational facility in the world. And it's a free app connecting charities that have dire need, which, boy, do so many, as you know firsthand from your experiences there, as you're telling me, Ben. All different charities right now are in such incredible need because there is in such incredible demand. And you type in, here, I'm a charity that wants to give. So everybody, if you want, our charity out there listening, make sure you sign up for our free app. If you're a volunteer and you want to give, sign up for our free app. And we will connect you immediately with, right away, electronically. Okay, here are the different charities that work. Here are ones in your area that work. Here are ones that virtually would work. So there's so many different ways that people can give that works with their interests and their schedules. And the other thing is, too, is also virtual speaker series, too. We're connecting with people who are real-life heroes, but also people who can talk about the lessons of leadership and service. We had Susan Eisenhower, of course, the granddaughter of Dwight D. Eisenhower. I did a discussion with her, and we opened it up to questions. Think about, you know, people young and old around the world being able to ask questions. We had Ben Carson, of course, you know, incredible neurosurgeon and HUD secretary. We also had a former prime minister of Israel, Ehud Olmert, and we've had just these incredible speakers of all walks of life. It's a nonpartisan, but it's also a way for people to get to know real-life heroes. And we have on our honorary board, by the way, as you talk about real-life heroes, we have Hank Greenberg, an incredible businessman, but what people don't realize, he's one of the top businessmen in America. What many people don't know about him is he was D-Day, Omaha Beach, first wave.
Wow.
Think about what this guy saw. We have Irving Locker, another great, incredible American hero who became a staff sergeant at age 19, and he was Utah Beach, you know, a D-Day veteran. I mean, think about what this guy saw, Battle of the Bulge. He also was a concentration camp liberator. I mean, these are real-life heroes among us, and to be able to have young people especially be able to talk to these real-life heroes, get to know these real-life heroes, their stories, and say, gosh, you know, I can do incredible things myself.
And
that, to me, has been a gift.
Rita, I get those names. I get where Buzz Aldrin fits in. I get where General Wesley Clark fits in, but where the heck does Nick Wallenda come into that mix?
Nick Wallenda.
Don't answer that. I'm just teasing.
Yeah. I figured if I'm going to walk out on a tightrope and put everything on the line, I need a guy who knows how to do that firsthand.
Perfect answer. Now, I tell you, one thing that I love about that, the 100, all right, well, let me back up a little. Give us the website where folks can go and sign up and get all this great stuff.
Absolutely. It's globalserviceinstitute.org, globalserviceinstitute.org. You can sign up for the speaking, find out about all these incredible programs like the 100 Small Ideas to Change the World, and any way that you can help also, please make sure you check it out for that.
Rita, we've only got 3 minutes left. I just got to say, I love the 100 Ideas to Change the World. You talk about the value of listening. We need to listen to the young people out there who might have something new to add. Very quickly, though, I don't want to overlook one of the greatest things you've done recently is your push to get the Congressional Gold Medal for the unsung heroes of our Merchant Marines. That, I believe, has been successful. That's signed into law now. But tell our – and frankly, literally, before I came in the studio today, I sent a note to Dave – I think it's Dave Yoho, and I want to have him on the show.
Yes.
So tell us about the Merchant Marines real quick and why we shouldn't overlook them and their efforts as well.
Well, speaking of unsung heroes, as we're talking about, these guys lost 1 in 26, which is very, very difficult odds. They suffered more casualties, especially during World War II, than any of the other services because they were sitting ducks out there. As we talk about Normandy, for example, these were the guys bringing in the equipment, bringing in our troops, and they did not have the weaponry. They did not have the firepower like our other ships did. These were, you know, many of them obviously citizen soldiers who were just rising up to help. And these guys really got passed over for decades upon decades. And I got to know so many of the Merchant Marines, heard their story. And thanks to the great work of people like Dave Yoho and so many others, I thought, you know, I have to do whatever I can. And together as a team, we all put together, we went to Congress and actively said, these people need to be recognized with the top service that American branches could get and the top service that heroes could get, and that is the Congressional Gold Medal. And it did get signed into law. We were so thrilled it went through Congress. President Trump signed it. It was back in March of last year, and they will be officially presented the gold medal in 2021, and I will be there with tears in my eye just to be able to see that moment, because so many of these people, and we talk about so many of them, are now in their, you know, 90s, many of them. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're Merchant Marines from all decades, but particularly these guys are now, thank goodness, some of them being able to be alive and to see this moment. When I, you know, talked to some of them right when it got passed into law, literally were crying on the phone with me and thanking me. And I thought, gosh, how can we thank you? How can America thank you for your incredible service? It's the least I could do to play a role in this effort.
Well, I guess 40 plus years later is not too late, but thank you for doing that. Rita, we're pretty much out of time. What, real quick, folks, buy the book, Our Hero. Check out the Global Service Institute. Rita, 30 seconds, you're a pro. What's next for you? What do you want to encourage our listeners to know?
Get to know how you can give back in your own life. You know, find the heroes in your own community. That's what I think we're doing at the Global Service Institute. And again, check out globalserviceinstitute.org because, you know, a life of meaning and a life of giving back and passing it on is the greatest gift of all.
Rita, thank you so much for your time and for what you continue to do. Ladies and gentlemen, find this podcast and others at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Spotify, Pandora, wherever. Just find us. Until next time, all these policies and procedures will remain in place. Take care.
You've been listening to American Warrior Radio. You can hear over 150 episodes of this program at AmericanWarriorRadio.com.